Welcome to episode 478 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a grand conversation with actor, writer, producer, and co-artistic director of the theater group What Will the Neighbors Say, Anna Cristina Da Silva. Anna talks with us from her place in Brooklyn, New York. We discuss how it all started, from Florida to Austin to New York City, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, provoking questions through untold stories, abortion access, hurting her foot and finding theater, wearing multiple hats, a puppet show, nuanced conversations, trauma and sexual assault, meeting people eye to eye, patience and empathy, among other things. A grand conversation with Anna Cristina Da Silva this go round. We have an EW essay called Cloth Parts. We share the fifth installment of our associate producer Dr. Michael Pavese's essay series called Watch the Ice. This one is titled Tattooed Woman at the Bar, as performed by actor extraordinaire Dominic Azzarelli. And we have an EW poem titled Roberta. All of this, of course, will be infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 478 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. cloth pants. Everybody gets a gun. Nobody gets a choice. It's a culture war, baby. The bad guys are winning. What do we do? One should not lose their cool, though, too. One must have some fire in their belly to do what he, she must do. I am talking in the context of peace, to take down this beast. The people who actively cultivate the fissures and divides so that we are distracted and they can hide the greed and unabandoned lust for power they have and be and need to survive. I saw a little boy the other day, maybe 5 or 6, standing on a sidewalk facing the road I was driving on, steadfast, yet betwixt old, tattered, faded, blue, long cloth pants, cuffed at the ankles, long sleeve, wrinkled plaid, button-down shirt, rolled up at the wrists, uneven, untucked, old, mud-dirty, laced shoes. One of his arms, the left, hanging straight down toward the ground, hands slightly cupped, palm facing back, his other arm bent at an obtuse angle, the knuckles of his hand facing the road, his fingers curled down, but for the middle one. It pointed straight up, with a little tilt to the right. His face was sullen and cold of expression, and yet vibrant with life. This to me, that day and today, is an emblem and the fruit of our history, our sins, our glory, our arrogant largesse and impatient selfish ways, our dumb religion and missed opportunities at community and true love. This is our American demise, our American strife. There is nothing but open sky and endless space below and above. And this is the conclusion of a dream for an American good life. Those false lullabies speaking of absolute truth, mix it in with some vermouth and get drunk on the lies. Aren't you tired of living this way?
Oh, hell, the little things you say and do make me want to be with you. Rain on, it's crazy leaving, and I know it's got me reeling when you say I love you. Rain on, the way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight. Rain on, it's crazy leaving, and I know it's got me reeling when you say.
Hello, Ana Cristina da Silva. Is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Thanks for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, before we get started, let me share a little background information with our listeners.
Absolutely.
Ana Cristina da Silva is an actor, writer, producer, and co-artistic director of What Will the Neighbors Say? With a mission to provoke questions through untold stories. Born in Florida, raised in Austin, but not quite from anywhere, Ana Cristina is a first-generation American. Both her parents were born and raised in Caracas, Venezuela. She studied drama and social and cultural analysis at NYU. She also trained with the Stella Adler Shakespeare Conservatory. Most recently, she joined the Drama League for the North American debut of Pure. Ana Cristina also toured in the Diana tapes, portraying Princess Diana, in an internationally acclaimed tour ending in London, where she made her off-West End debut. Her work has been described as, quote, chilling, crisp, and focused by Broadway World, fascinating to watch by the Providence Journal, and memorable by Theater Is Easy. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is happy to have on the program Ana Cristina da Silva. Again, thanks for being on.
Wow, thank you so much. What an introduction. I really appreciate being here.
Oh, cool. Well, let's get started with, your, I guess, beginning. How did you get to where you are from Florida to here?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, my father's work took us to Austin, and in Austin, I was exposed to quite a wacky array of artists, visual and theatrical alike. And after 17 years of being in Austin, Texas, I wanted to mix it up a little bit, and I was really inspired to go to NYU. So I auditioned and got in and spent my time there studying drama at the experimental theater wing, where I met my co-artistic directors, Sam and James, who founded What Will the Neighbors Say with me. And yeah, that really is what started our journey, is undergrad and exploring experimental theater techniques together. And we ended up my junior year of college, they're a little bit older than me, but we worked on two shows together during a summer. The Diana Tapes was one of them, and Sources of Light Other Than the Sun was the other. When we took the Diana Tapes to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, it was a hit. We made a profit, and we learned then that we had something going for us, and that we not only were good theatrical collaborators, but ultimately really skilled producers and complemented each other's skill sets. So that's when we decided to incorporate, and that led us down a path of, all right, we're incorporated and we're an LLC, and then we got fiscally sponsored, and ultimately we decided to become a not-for-profit theater institution to provoke questions through untold stories. So that's a little bit about my journey.
Sounds great. Now, a span of time, what years are we talking? You know, starting at NYU and to where you ended up starting your theater company.
Yes, absolutely. I started my journey at NYU in 2013, and then we founded the company in 2016. I graduated in 2017, and we are about to reach our sixth birthday in August. So we have been around for six seasons.
Excellent, excellent. And when you say, you're trying to provoke people to think, basically, and to explore important issues in society. Is this done mostly by original works, or are you using works that have been around for a long time and reinterpreting them and things of that nature?
We produce exclusively original works, and another way in which we like to provoke questions through untold stories is through our community programming. And so each year we like to host two fundraisers for other not-for-profits that align with us in terms of the questions that we're asking ourselves at this point in time. So my piece that I've been working on is about sexual assault and autonomy. And so on June 30th, we have a fundraiser aligned with Females' Rights and Autonomy for a fundraiser to raise funds for abortion access. And so in that way, we like to invite our community in and provoke questions about autonomy, not only through the theater that we create and the original work that we create, but through inviting them to interesting and exciting events that will spark similar questions and hopefully also gauge interest in the theatrical work that we create.
Excellent. Yeah, I could see when you look at some of the choices you made when you were studying in college, they they blend together, right? I mean, drama as one area of study and the other social and cultural analysis. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing.
I know. It's crazy. I really did not anticipate it at all, you know. I really love to work hard, and I'm somebody who loves to learn, and so that's why I ended up doing two majors in school, and it's really exciting and fulfilling to be able to put them into practice through this work.
Now, when you were younger, you know, growing up in Austin, did you find yourself compelled, drawn to the theater or to film or the arts in general?
So when I was younger, I was a gymnast, and I had a bad accident with my foot that left me in a cast for about 3 months. And in those 3 months, I discovered theater. And I think what really kept me there was the community. And, you know, one of the things I think that is really important about the theater is the community. Like, that's what keeps me there, the people that I work with, and having a sense of community and people to lean on, I think is what got me there and kept me there. And I've always loved the arts. I'm quite a creative person, and visuals and colors and experiencing something live. You know, Austin is known for their live music, which is theatrical in its own kind of way. And so being present live in front of a performance is, something that I've always loved and enjoyed.
And how about some of your influences? Once you realized you like theater, who spoke to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, some of the people that are really speaking to me are Raja Feather Kelly, who has been doing a lot of choreography and movement direction. It's a part of the theater landscape that I'm really invested in right now and really would love to reinvent the way that we use bodies on stage and straight plays. And Raja Feather Kelly has been doing such an amazing a job at that. I'm also really inspired by Anna Deavere Smith, who does a lot of verbatim theater. In addition to creating original plays, my company likes to do a lot of documentary theater work, which often is so fulfilling to be able to give people a voice. And also we take their verbatim theater and craft it into a play and reflect it back to them, which can be a really cathartic experience. So Anna Deavere Smith is someone who's really influenced a lot of my work. And Claire Barron, I just saw her play recently at Atlantic. She's a playwright and an actor, and I have always been inspired by people who wear multiple hats and somehow make it work seamlessly as an actor and a playwright director myself. You can't always wear them all at once, and sometimes they pair better together for certain projects. So seeing other people take that on and how they execute that, like Claire Barron, has been really inspiring. And Michelle Coe, I know that's not theater. Michelle Coe is a screenwriter, actor, director who recently created I May Destroy You. And you know, just the way that she interprets and retells her own story and acting in it. Yeah, these are some of the people that have really inspired me and brought me to where I am today.
Great. Now, talking about inspiring you in your own work, you wrote my associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, who is the one that said, we have to have this person on our show. He knows your work. And he told me about a weighty, as he calls it, puppet drama you wrote about the inner life of a woman as personified by her pet bird. Explain that a bit to us, would you?
Absolutely, yes. The piece is called The Chickens Have Come Home to Roost. And the puppet is a chicken. It's a little chicken bird. It doesn't look exactly like a chicken. It maybe more resembles the jumping eyeball in Pixar when it comes up and it's like a little white. Looks a little bit like that. It's really an exploration of trauma and how it functions in the mind. So a woman shows up on an on a stage and it's all white, and the first thing she meets is this talking chicken who says, "I'm here to help you, I'm here to save you." And it's a memory play where slowly we go on this date journey and realize that this woman, Angie, has had this really complicated sexual encounter with a man, one where each of the participants' actions are difficult and questionable and hard to judge. And we go on this journey of how she can begin to swallow the truth of her experience in order to move on. And ultimately, this chicken is that alarm bell. It's that trauma response who holds all of her trauma and her experiences, the current one and all of the past, and her capacity to acknowledge and confront that and what that means for her relationship to this chicken.
Wow. That sounds pretty heavy, but I mean, it's, I think about what you're working on and what is, it seems to me, based on our brief discussion, is important to you. And,
yeah.
You know, you live in a great place. You know, you live in a very progressive place, New York City, or you're in the city a lot. And you know, if you step outside and or you see what's going on in many, many enclaves within our country, a lot of our fellow citizens don't think necessarily in the same way that you do. Does it frustrate you? Do you just disconnect from it? Does it drive you more to try to, you know, in your own way, get a conversation going?
Yeah, no, it's certainly challenging at any time to be in an environment where you don't feel like you necessarily meet eye to eye with people. And New York is a wonderful place for sure, and it is progressive, but you know, it has its own shortcomings. And even as much as we all think that we are progressive, there's so many limitations to each of our understandings of trauma and sexual assault and autonomy. And the first iteration of this piece when I wrote it, it was not in an unclear sexual encounter. It was much more clear that, like, who was right and who was wrong. And I've been trying to lean more and more into it being unclear in my effort to be like, hey, like, no one is necessarily a good or a bad guy. It's just like, can you, if you feel and experience this unsettled moment and then see how it affected this woman, not saying the other person is a criminal, not saying that they are malicious, just simply that this person's actions affected this person in this way, maybe we can start to not see it as a black and white conversation of like, this person is good and this person is bad, but more like, oh, this is nuanced. Like, ultimately right now, I feel like a lot of this country doesn't have the capacity to have nuanced conversation. We're all really on defense and we don't want to be the bad guy. And in this play, that's what I'm trying to do, is open up a conversation where it's like, hey, this person isn't a bad guy. He is, but made this other person uncomfortable. And can we see and acknowledge that? And I feel like theater does a good job of being able to, you know, put us in a room and experience that sensation. It's hard to deny. So hopefully this is a way in which I can bring up a conversation where it's like, we're not going to talk about you and a personal experience that you're talking about. Like, this is a fictional play where it's nuanced and unclear, and maybe we can connect to that and reflect on like, oh, these are just actions or reactions. It's not trying to put someone in jail.
Right, or judge, you know.
Right.
So narrowly, perhaps. Excuse me, and the name of the play again.
The Chickens Have Come Home to Roost.
And will it be staged anytime soon again? Is it being staged right now?
So right now, I've had a couple of workshops in the spring. I did a workshop in April that was a movement and intimacy workshop to develop the movement world and kind of narrow in on the exact kind of intimacy I want to portray. And then in May, I did another script workshop that developed character relationships and the script as a whole. It's still unfinished. The next stage of development in the fall, funded by the Brooklyn Arts Council and the Creative opportunity fund at ART, I'm going to build a puppet. So we're not at full staging moments yet, but I'm really excited to dive into puppetry in the fall and build that out. And hopefully in the next calendar year, we'll have all of the elements and the script finished out to fully stage it for a workshop premiere.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And your theater company mm-hmm. is located, does it have its own home? I know you have a name and you have people involved. What mm-hmm. will the neighbors say is the name of the company? Where is your space?
Our home is in Brooklyn, but we don't have a physical location of our own. So we tend to bounce around, rent venues, and co-produce with other organizations and host things there.
You're starting to remind me of Bread and Puppet Theater, you know?
Oh, yes. I'm going to go see one of their shows on July 1st. They have a new puppet show that I'm excited to go see.
Where is it, in the city or is it up in Vermont?
It is in the city. It's at La Mama, the puppet home.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I'm friends with some of those folks,
really?
You know, and Peter Schumann, the founder. Yeah. I've had him on the show a couple times. I actually did some work with him. Amazing, amazing what they're all about. And I'm sure again you know of them and probably in some ways are fans.
Our big fans.
Yeah. They. I asked him one time, Peter. I said, "What's the point of what you're doing?" He said. Something to the effect, let me think, to dismantle the government. He started laughing. To overthrow the government. That's what he said. And he laughed, you know, like a crazy person. He's brilliant. And you guys sound like you're brilliant as well. We're talking to Ana Cristina da Silva.
Cool.
And she is one of the co-artistic directors and founders of What Will the Neighbors Say, with some mm-hmm. of her friends and colleagues from NYU. And, you know, let me ask you about the name of your theater company, What Will the Neighbors Say?
Yes.
Where'd you come up with that, or how did you come up with that?
Absolutely. Well, we honestly, what we did was we were like, okay, we need a name. So over the course of a week, we just tasked ourselves, each of us, to write down 5 names a day in a shared Google Doc. And so at the end of the week, we had something like 75 names, and we whittled it down. But honestly, it just came out of a conversation, you know, a dinner conversation of like, what are the neighbors going to say? And the original saying is, what would the neighbors say? And we decided to give that a little tweak and say, what will the neighbors say? Because we thought it was emblematic of our tongue-in-cheek style and this sense that we weren't going to ask for permission to speak our minds. We were just going to speak our minds and let the audience respond rather than asking for them for permission to speak.
Right. I like that. I like that very much. You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. Now, how about, in your view,
mm-hmm.
the importance and also, you know, what is essential and unique about theater to humanity, to society?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what brought me to the theater was the people and the community, and its live performance brings us together. And, you know, especially during the pandemic, I feel like that really resonated with me over everything else. You know, it's like it feels essential to create space for people to experience live performance because it's reflecting people's issues back at them and giving them, like, for someone to see a character go through a lived experience that they've had in real time can be a really cathartic experience. And so providing people the opportunity to see that and witness that live feels really essential to me. So community programming, like, it's all theater and live performances, great. And I feel like if it's paired with robust community programming where we engage the community in conversations after we've given them so much to think about in a theatrical experience, giving them space to have those conversations and to ask us and to challenge us on what we just shared with them feels really essential to me.
Yeah, and it sounds exhilarating as well. Now, there is a thing that always comes to my mind when talking about these sorts of endeavors, you know, bringing poignant, provocative theater to people. A lot of times, the people that come, they're in a way already in your sort of world. You know, you're preaching to the choir, as I said. And I think it would be very valuable and helpful if we could get people that wouldn't otherwise come to experience it. Do you ever think about that? I mean, that's what I think Bread and Puppet did. They brought it to the people often, right? They didn't say, come to us. Well, here we are coming at you. Now try to digest this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, how do we get people to the theater that wouldn't necessarily seek it out? And often that's where I feel like the community programs come into play. During the pandemic, we started to produce these things called writing workshops, where we would bring it to the community and we would guide them through prompts where they could either digest their grief because we were going through COVID and share it. And so what we would do is have them do this writing workshop, collect all of their materials, and then regroup it and play it back to them. Now, the people who often come to these are not theater people, they're not writers, they're just people looking to connect. And I feel like it's a really valuable way in which we can introduce the power of theater to someone. It's like, don't just come and see my finished product, like, come make a product with me, come be a part of the thing, and let me show you what the power of theater can do, what it can do for you about sharing your story and seeing it reflected back to you. And often I feel like that's what plays are. Like, sure, they're not every single individual person's story, but what they are is someone producing a story on stage in an effort to connect with all those other people who've had that same experience. Or the fundraisers, you know, just bringing people in different ways that they wouldn't normally expect and be like, and we're a theater company.
I love it. I love it. I love what you're doing. And I have to ask, I'm hearing all kinds of noises in the background, and I like it. It creates an environment. Where are you?
I am in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, on the edge of Clinton Hill and Bed-Stuy, Gates and Franklin. I live on the first floor, so that background noise is the lovely streets of New York City.
I love it. We have several minutes left, and I guess I just want to, you're an artist, you're obviously a very intelligent, very educated human being, and I'm just, as a fellow citizen, as a fellow human, what do you think about how things are going in our country?
Oof. I mean, it's quite a time to be alive, certainly. I don't know what to think of it. It's, you know, looks like history is repeating itself, and I suppose that's natural. I have, as an individual, really tried to take a lot of deep breaths and gain a sense of patience and figure out what battles to pick and what battles to choose. I come from a very varied background. So I'm a first generation American. My parents are from Venezuela, but their parents are from different countries. And so I have a very international family, and we do talk about it a lot. It's hard to feel like you have any agency or like capacity to really change the course of the way things are going. So I don't know. I just try to take every day one step at a time. And right now my focus is kind of to slow down. Like, I love theater and I make theater, and I'm excited to continue to pursue the craft of sharing my story on stage and connecting with audience members. But over the last couple of years, just seeing how the pandemic has panned out and the way our country has kind of found itself divided, I have just for myself started to think, like, what does happiness mean? Like, where am I happy? Is it in New York City all the time? Do I need to be a striver all the time? Or is it sometimes just slowing down and being grateful for the people in my life that I do connect with and that I do align with my values? And there's, of course, a lot of people in this country that I don't align with, but I try to have patience and empathy for their point of view, and keep an open mind in my capacity to communicate with them, because everyone has something to teach you, even if you don't fully align, and hopefully that patience can help us all heal.
Well said. Well said. Now, if people want to get connected to what you're doing, how could they do that?
Absolutely. I am on Instagram. I have a funny name. It's da_real_Anna_banana. The reason I started with da is because it kind of rhymes with banana instead of banana. So it's like Anna Banana. So you can follow me on Instagram, and I love to post about my work going there. Or you can reach out to me via email, annaschuler17@gmail.com. Those are some ways you can stay connected with me.
Well, it was a pleasure talking with you here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And once you get the play together, after you workshop it and you want to talk some more about it, please let us know. Love to have you on again. And we can talk about whatever else you like as well. Obviously, you have a lot going on.
Yes, absolutely. I'll let you know when my puppet is built and ready, and we can talk all about the nitty-gritties of building a puppet or any other endeavors that I'm working on. You know, theater is great, and there's also like poetry books and maybe an album of music. An artist of all sorts.
Excellent. It's great talking with you. Great becoming acquainted with you. Have a wonderful summer.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was great to be here, and I loved the conversation, and I can't wait to talk soon. Have a great summer.
You too. Take care.
Ciao.
Zombie. see that woman at the end of the bar? The one with the tattoos? Yeah, her. She reminds me of someone. Used to be something of a regular. A semi-regular, let's say. I love a woman with tattoos. You know that Groucho Marx song, Lydia, the Tattooed Lady? Oh, Lydia, oh, Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia, the Tattooed Lady. Well, I really like this particular tattooed lady. She came in usually by herself around 7 o'clock or so, right after the daily number. The geezers would start moaning when their number didn't come up, and she would sail into the bar, take a seat at the end, and order a dirty martini. Now, this isn't exactly a dirty martini kind of joint, but the bartender liked her too. So he'd nod and smile, and he wasn't a smiling sort either, and even chill her glass. Fancy. She would have at the most two drinks and then leave. Small talk with the bartender, a smile or two with the regulars and barflies. Sometimes a friend would meet her and they would sit at the corner table quietly talking for a while. No lining up of shots, no screaming laughter, no loud arguments. A couple of drinks and out the door. Despite the bartender's attempts to dig for info, we didn't know much about her. Job? She must have had one. Boyfriend or husband or partner? Who knew? She was a mystery to us. She was an enigma. The main thing that we knew about her, we could see on her arms, and in the summer, her legs, and in one band around her neck. Of course, nowadays, everyone has a tattoo. Your grandmother probably has a heart tattooed on her old butt. In those days, they were more of a novelty. On one arm, a bouquet of flowers. On the other, what looked like a dragon. On one leg, a string of broken hearts. On the other, signs and symbols and moons and stars. And around her neck, a saying in the invented language of fantasy novel. I only know that last bit of information from casual eavesdropping on my way to the men's room. I wanted to study these tattoos and know all about them. What they meant, when she got them, why she picked them. But I could only observe from my stool, glances. I didn't want to be pervy or gawky. There's more than enough competition for pervy and gawky in that bar. So, you might ask, why didn't I just sit next to her and start up a conversation? Maybe it was something to do with my history with women. It's been, what's the word? Checkered. Let's put aside middle school and high school crushes and heartbreaking one-sided romances that existed only in my head. Let's keep it to adult relationships, so to speak. There was Lola, a fine girl I met at one of my many jobs. She was a bit of a kook. We were both young and we had lots of fun for a while. We married and divorced in record time. After we married, we didn't have much fun anymore, and we both realized it was better to bail out now than to settle in for the long haul. Then there was Joni. I met her, surprise, at the bar. We had a series of flings, most of which involved drinking into the wee hours of the morning. By the afternoon, when we had sobered up, we discovered that we weren't quite compatible. Sober, we didn't seem to like each other much. But by nighttime, we were ready for another fling. And eventually, we were all flung out. Joni moved on to another bar, and I started going home long before the last call. And then there was Francine, lovely girl who worked at the cash register at the convenience store where I bought my lottery tickets. She was studying to be a physical therapist. Smart lady. Much smarter than me. We got along great together, but she wanted a normal life, a family. And I wanted, well, I didn't know what I wanted. She could see I wasn't ready for the plunge, and I probably never would be. So she moved on, met a nice fella, and had a happy life. And I'm buying lottery tickets at the same convenience store. Oh yeah, the tattooed woman at the bar. So we exchanged a few words, but I never got the nerve to sit down next to her and start a real conversation. Maybe all that ink intimidated me. She stopped coming in a while ago, and we all still miss her. Ah, well, you can learn a lot from Lydia. Great song. I gotta go. Watch the ice.
Your mom does that?
Yeah, she does.
Roberta. On a table, crisp, yellow, green, dandelion, bread pickles tickle the fancy of Nancy and Fred in the summer sun, and tantalize Trudy and nebulous Ned into a frenzy. Sweet Henry and Bartholomew, whisper wayward words of chance to Glenn and his fluffy white dog named Buttermilk Jim. Jair and Roberta Slim hold hands tight as they walk by the forgiving tree with all of their might, without a word about it stated otherwise, because this secular facade of sweet harmony could crumble to shite.
Drawn to the wonder, I can feel it coming. Do you hear the night from the river bridge? I hear the thunder. Ah, the storm in your skin on mine. Tell me, what's the story? Morning glory, whisper it to me in a grand hotel, telling me all the time I'm sorry. Baby, don't I know it? It ain't hard to tell you. Well, I know. Yeah, I know. Get so low, before you get high, before you go, come say hello. 'Cause I'm never gonna find a way to say goodbye, 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 goodbye. Hot tears. Hot tears. Lightning evening in the holy highlands, down in the hall, up against the wall. I know you're struggling what to call it. Why you gotta call it anything at all? Now, is it a dream or some soft poison eyes looking away? Yeah, you bled the blues, yeah. Is it a dream or some soft poison eyes? Yeah, I know. You get so low before you get high, before you go, come say hello. 'Cause I'm never gonna find a way to say goodbye, 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 goodbye. Goodbye, hot tears. Heavenly love is right on time, but is it enough?
And there you have it, episode 478 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Anna Cristina Da Silva, Dr. Michael Pavese, Dominic Azzarelli, and these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, Stevie Wonder, Buddy Holly, Polo and Pan, Honey Butter, Leif Volebeck, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.